Awesome to welcome South Florida head coach Jose Fernandez to the basketball podcast. Fernandez has carved out a 25-year head coaching career at South Florida with multiple accolades. He is the program's all-time winningest coach, having claimed American Athletic Conference Coach of the Year honors twice in 2018 and 2021, and has led the Bulls to 10 NCAA tournament appearances and secured four conference championships, including two conference tournament championships and two regular season titles. Fernandez's influence extends beyond his program as he is set to become the WBCA president from 2025 to 27. His coaching has produced nine WNBA draft picks and signees, and 24 of his former players are competing professionally worldwide. Fernandez has also demonstrated success against top-tier competition with 20 wins against top 25 ranked teams. Throughout his career, Fernandez has recruited and coached over 40 all-conference players, two Associated Press Honorable Mention All-Americans, three members of the USF Athletics Hall of Fame, two AAC Players of the Year, two AAC Newcomers of the Year, four AAC Freshmen of the Year, one AAC Defensive Player of the Year, one AAC Most Improved Player, and seven WNBA draft picks. This year, Fernandez will return to USA Basketball for his second assistant coaching stint with the USA Basketball as an assistant for the 2025 Women's Under-19 National Team. He previously served in the role for the 2024 Women's Under-18 National Team and was also a court coach at the 2018 USA Women's Under-18 National Team Trials.
Hey, coach, a brief interruption of our podcast. You know the best player development is coaching development. So let's work together to get your entire basketball organization or program unparalleled expertise and access to Basketball Immersion's group memberships. It's affordable, and your players will thank you. Contact us today, basketballimmersion.com, contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Get your coaches full access to our extensive coaching video library, detailed courses, and modern evidence-based coaching ideas. You can have proven coach development at your fingertips for all of your coaches. Elevate your coaches, elevate your teams. Get started now. Basketball Immersion Group Membership is where innovation meets excellence. Contact us today at basketballimmersion.com, contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Now back to the podcast.
Coach Fernandez, welcome to the basketball podcast.
Thank you for having me. Looking forward
Coach,
to it.
over 25 years coaching at the same place. Pretty remarkable. What to the sustainability of your career?
Now, with the ever-changing landscape in women's basketball, there's not many of us that have been at a place for the amount of time that I've been. And I've seen a lot of growth in the University of South Florida, especially coaching in three different leagues: Conference USA, the Big East, and the American, which has been retooled a couple times. But I think for me, I've never lived anywhere outside of the state of Florida. So I coach high school boys, high school girls, junior college men, Division II men, and Division II women. And I got a great opportunity at a young age in 2000 to come here and as a recruiting coordinator. And about 6, 7 months later, I was named interim head coach. And that was a great opportunity. Paul Griffin, the AD at the time, gave me the opportunity of a lifetime. And it's what you make with those opportunities. And we were fortunate that we were able to build it and go from 4 wins to 14, took a step back as a young coach, recruiting wise, and maybe making some roster decision management to bring in some transfers and some junior college guys. And you make mistakes, right? And I was really young because you think you're ready basketball wise, X and O wise, but that's probably 20% of the job that I do every day. And then year 4 NIT, year 5 NIT, and then year 6, the NCAA tournament. And now winning an NIT national championship and going to 10 NCAA tournaments in the last, I don't know how many years. I've had some very good people that have worked alongside and have moved on and became head coaches, and getting the young guys on your staff to move on and get them ready for their next dreams and aspirations. And it's worked out well. I've had great support from the last two athletic directors, Michael Kelly currently and Mark Harlan. And I think it started with him seeing the vision and the support that we could win here in Tampa. And if we didn't win our league, to make sure we position ourselves to get an at-large bid. So you got to really have great support from your administration. And I've had that here at South Florida.
And one, you've won over 60% of your games over your 25 years, which is pretty cool, no doubt. And I texted a few coaches in your league that I know, and the words that came up most frequently about your teams was toughness, discipline, and international flair. So I'm curious if you identify with those three words about your team, or what are some of the things that identify with your program and its success?
Now, with the program that we've established and what we have, we don't have to take any chances on any character issues or culture issues or work ethic. And the guys we bring in, they have to adapt to the way that we do things. And I think it starts with the best teams are one in the locker room, right? And your upperclassmen control that locker room. And this is the way that we do things here. So you got to have that buy-in. And I've had some really good players. I believe last year we've had 20, 24, 25 former players playing overseas. And we've had seven, eight players drafted in the WNBA draft. We had to make a huge decision when we were going from the Big East to the American, when Notre Dame, Rutgers, and Louisville left. It was just Connecticut, us, and Cincinnati were the holdovers. And then the league changed, and I really had a tough time recruiting the top 100 American kid because we weren't in a Power Five league. Now, we were very successful in non-league play against Power Five teams. So that's where we made the shift. If we can go to Spain, Italy, Portugal, Latvia, and get the best player out of that country, they were going to be a top 50 kid here. And that's what we did. I think our brand of basketball and our player development has helped us continue to recruit those high-level international players. But as you have seen around the world in the NBA and the WNBA, it's a global game. It's changed at the professional level. Now, the amount of international basketball players, both on the men's side and the women's side, collegiately has grown exponentially.
You mentioned player development. I'm curious then, what is your player development approach in terms of players? And again, sometimes transfers, sometimes first-year players. There's a mix of players that come into your program.
I think it starts in the off season in the summer. We don't have a lot of our kids here in the summer, probably only half of them because they're playing with their national teams or their senior national team. Now with the transfer portal, I'm going to have four US kids that played at Division I institutions that'll be here the first week of June. We do not do anything as a team at all to our 30 practices in that eight week deal. We got four individual workout sessions. And then even before we get into those 30 practices in 42 days, we're doing individual workouts. And then that leads into the season where every one of our kids has three individual workouts during the season. And we divide it up where I'm involved with as many individual workout sessions in the summer. Now my schedule's been a little different working with USA Basketball last summer and this summer. So that's changed with my schedule, and we try and get around that as much as possible. And then once we start the season, of course, I divide up. We got a coach that works with the point guards, a coach that works with the wings, one with the stretch fours, and one with the back to the basket fives. So that's their position coaches.
When you assess what to develop for a player, where does that start for you?
The way that we play, and I'm sure you've talked to a lot of coaches in our league, our playbook's pretty extensive. It's really fundamentals, passing, catching, finishing around the rim, and having a plan for each individual player as, okay, what are we going to concentrate in this offseason? And then that's going to change for the next offseason, and then for the season after that. And like, for example, the young lady, Kit Yalaksa, who's with the Phoenix Mercury, right? When she came in, she was a standstill three-point shooter. What did she need to do? She needed to develop her mid-range game and getting to the rim, getting to the free throw line, using her size and her length. Courtney Williams, her first 2 years, she was great at mid-range, but we needed to expand her range. And you look at her numbers from 3-point land, how she progressed from her freshman, sophomore, junior, senior year. So I think there's got to be really great communication with the head coach and with the player on the expectations and what do they think also that they need to get better at. because if those things are not aligned, then you're not going to get better.
You shaped a little bit player development, what that looks like. What does a Coach Fernandez practice look like?
I think your practices have to be harder than games. I like to have really those first 15 practices, you're putting so much in. So those are going to be a lot longer, right? They're going to be somewhere around the 2, 2.5, 2:45 range. And then those final 15, you're down to probably 2 hours. And then once we start playing, we're not going past an hour and 45 minutes because we're doing individual workouts 3 times a week. Once you get into January, you're just preparing and your practices are probably about an hour and 30. I think I was an education major, so I broke it up as a teacher, right? You got to have a daily plan, a weekly plan, a unit plan on what everything that you want to get in before that first game, right? And then also as the season comes along, because we play one of the strongest non-conference schedules every year in November and December. I think we're really tough to prepare for early. That's why we play such a strong schedule. But you want to have some really good stuff once you want to get into league play. And that goes into that December break, right? And once you get into conference play, you're really adding stuff to the stuff that you're doing well. Maybe some different actions, some different sets that look a lot different, but you've already worked on those kind of on those type of cuts and screens and setups that lead into the next opponent that you're going to play.
You referenced being a teacher. So I'm curious, what things did you take from becoming a teacher that have helped you the most on the basketball court? Obviously, you just referenced organization, but maybe from an actual communication, teaching, getting players to be able to connect it and transfer it to a game type of understanding.
I think doing this for the period that we've been doing it, I think everybody on our staff, and we have a very big staff in regards to 5 assistant coaches, and you have a video person, Adobo, and you have 3 GAs, and everybody's got to speak the same language, right? That has to be from the coaching staff and from the players on and off the basketball floor. Now, I'm really big on relationships. I think the more that you can connect with your players and they understand what you want from them, right? And what you expect from them and why you are demanding what you're demanding from them. I think those type of conversations have to be done. And the better that a head coach can have a relationship with their players, the more successful that you're going to be. We work with Chad Brown from Profile, and you've probably heard about it.
Yeah.
His system, everybody in the NBA and NFL takes his assessment in the combine. And this is going to be my 3rd year using Chad. And Lucas Jaden is our, you're familiar with Joshua Metcalf. They were partners in Pound the Stone and Win in the Dark and Twin Thieves. So we're his only women's basketball team that he works with. And we've been together for a very long time. And I think the best teams are the connected teams, and the relationship piece is huge. I make it a point where outside of seeing my players every day, they also have to shoot a number of free throws and they got to come and stop by after practice or during the day. So they're always around the office, but I meet with every one of my players, whether it's for breakfast, for lunch, in my office, once every 2 weeks. So it's more of that's, we don't even got to talk basketball, but basketball comes up. There's no, hey, this is what you're doing well. This is what you're not doing well. This is why you're not getting the minutes that you think you deserve. Sometimes you can be in the gym all the time. There's just going to be people that are better, right? So it's being able to have those truthful conversations. And I tell people all the time, not everybody can play here. And I tell parents that if you don't want to hear the truth, this isn't the place for you, because you're always going to know where I stand on and off the floor with you.
You referenced developing those relationships. So I'm curious, going a little bit further, maybe how does Profile help you build those relationships a little bit deeper? Can you connect that for us?
Yeah, I think it's a great tool on, okay, how does this kid want to be coached? Number one, what's important to them? What are their values? There's a lot of things that I wish this tool I had 10, 15 years ago. because they get to know me. This is a way that coach communicates, right? And it also helps me. This is a way some people, everybody learns differently as well, right? Whether it be film, paper, instruction, breaking down, communication, who are guys that are leaders, who are guys that can be made and coached to be leaders. There's a lot to it. That could be a whole different podcast in itself.
Absolutely. I'm also curious, because you mentioned the depth of the playbook. What are some ways that you help the players be able to manage that playbook and be able to transfer that again from practice to games?
A lot of the actions that we do and a lot of shots that we take are in player development. Whether you're coming off a nail screen or zipper or floppy set or misdirection, DHO stuff, right? Page up, having the same language, Zoom stuff. So I think they get it in paper, but with technology, with Synergy and Just Play, they have the Synergy app on their phone. They got the Just Play app on their phone. They got Teamworks on their phone. So all our kids have an iPad that's just for basketball. They have a laptop that's just academics. So whatever we put in, we film practice. So right after practice, that practice is for them. Now we'll watch clips as a team, but they can go back and see that practice. But also, let's say we put in a baseline out of bounds or a quick hitter off a transition or zone quick hitter. It's already got the name on it and how we taught it. We will have one where the male scrimmage team runs it and it's already there, and also how they ran it. So they have that at their disposal.
In terms of on the court, then, are we doing a lot of reps, connecting those actions then together? And then with that, when you approach a certain game, a certain specific opponent, are you emphasizing specific certain sets as well for that week, that these sets, or any week can you call any set?
Yeah, let's say, for example, if we're gonna play on a Saturday, we'll start that preparation with a two-pager personnel, right? We'll watch personnel film, right? Then the after practice, we'll watch the other team's man stuff. So then you lead into Friday and you're watching their defense, right? And the last film segment is special situations. So you're looking at about 4, 5.5, 6 minute film sessions to prepare for an opponent. But in those preparations, let's say, for example, there might be 9 or 10 things and we'll have their play calls. We'll go over it. But for me, just like the NBA, they got bulk shooting to go over to get shots within the stuff that they're going to run for that game coming up. We'll warm up with that. But I like to do defensive stations. So if we're going to see a team that's going to run a UCLA cut pin down, that'll be one station. Everybody will go through that, right? It might be a dribble drive. Okay, what are we going to do? Are we going to jam and go under? Or are we going to go orange and switch it? A lot of middle ball screens or horn sets. Okay, are we going to go over? Are we going to go under certain guys? Are we going to blitz under certain guys, get the ball out of their hands, make other people beat us? So we're doing that in station work. Small part, and then to the big part.
How many stations approximately are you doing?
Four, usually four.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do stations for 2 days, and they're quick. They're about two minutes and 45 seconds. We just rotate. We'll go over four actions. The next day, we'll go over another four actions, and that'll lead to they're seeing it against the male scrimmage team 5-on-5.
So these are almost like refreshers of things that you've taught. And now we're reminding them for this opponent, this is what's happening.
Right.
Yeah. Sounds like a good way to be able to learn, and comes back to your teaching a little bit, where it's like these quick hits, these refreshers, these reminders, and that leads to memory consolidation, the fact that they can remember them a little bit easier.
Yeah. This stuff, everybody does it differently and it's worked for us.
Yeah, I love that. Also wanted to ask you a little bit about zone offense. I know you've presented on this a few times, but in thinking about what you just talked about in terms of man-to-man, is your zone offense, is there a balance between being conceptual and being structured? And I assume that applies to your man-to-man and your offensive sets as well?
Yeah, you're going to have a base offense that you're going to run. So whatever quick hitters you're going to run against a zone, it's going to end up into your basic zone offense. And how are you going to attack a 2-3? How are you going to attack a traditional 3-2 or a 3-2 cover down, right? Or we don't see much 1-3-1, but against teams, you got to have that ready. We see a lot of junk just because we've had some very good perimeter players. So what are you gonna be your attacks against a box of one, against a triangle and two, in different ways that you will attack that. But I think it comes with a lot of scouting and preparation and seeing what the holes are against zones, right? You got to be able to attack it with penetration, with passing, attack it from the top, attack it from the baseline. So the more attacks that you can against zones, the better that you're going to be, right? Because if you got good, for me, I want to get the ball where I want to get it to. And I want certain guys shooting the ball against the zone. And there's got to be an understanding and a buy-in on, all right, this, some of you guys are going to be open for a reason, all right? And you're open for a reason. It's not what we want, right? If we want to get it to the nail, we want to get it to the elbow, we want to get the short corner. If we're going to overload the zone, we're going to run a runner through the baseline. If we're going to screen the zone and then misdirection, reverse it, and make an extra pass for a three in the corner, that's what we want. And if we don't have it, then you're into traditionally against a 2-3, right? You have somebody in the high post, somebody in the short corner, ball reversal, you go X action, or you can run a wing through or a top through to the corner. So it's tough when we're just talking about it and I don't have a pen and we're not drawing it up.
We can get you on the court, coach. Let's go right now. It'd be fun. But I know, like, I've been coaching as long as you have, and it used to be such a debate that you'd do this set versus this type of zone, this set versus this type of zone. And I find nowadays it's more adaptable in that way, that we recognize that it's not in the set. It's more of conceptually where you're trying to get the ball and who you're trying to get the ball to. Does that hold true for you?
Yeah, especially against a 3-2, right? Where are you going to get a shot in a 3-2? You're going to expose the corner. You're going to expose the elbow areas with the pass from the top. You get it to the nail. Now the zone converges. You get it from one side. Make sure you make the defense shift, whether with the dribble or with the pass. Against a 2-3, what you want is attacking gaps and good ball reversals, and now making bottom forwards have to make a decision where that guard's got to kick down the bottom forward. Now the bottom forward's got to either guard the short corner or extend out to a guy in the corner. 1-3-1's a lot different. You're using a lot of diagonal passes, and because 1-3-1, you got those two wings always cover the backside block. So you want to have that diagonal pass option from the slot to that opposite block. It's getting our players to understand where we want to get the ball to for us to have the best and highest efficiency shots.
You outlined practice a little bit, and curious from a developing your zone attack perspective. You mentioned scout team. You mentioned doing shooting drills within different sets and different actions. I assume you do that, but do you do any type of small-sided games versus zone to be able to help your players understand the gaps and the space and the advantages?
Yeah, and a lot of things that we play a lot of games within games. So we're attacking. Let's say we got the ball up top. The team's already set up. We got another team on the other end. So now you're going 5-on-5. Your scout team will be in a 2-3, extended 2-3, regular 2-3, 3-2. So now point guard's got to recognize all the other four, got to really repeat the call, get into the set, miss or make, right? Now that other team's attacking in transition against the zone, right? So what are we doing with a team already in zone and we have transition offense that flows into our zone offense, right? Now that we got another group going back and that team's already set. So we'll go three trips and then start it. Okay, now we're going to start at the top, dead, and then.
Three trips, the same teams on offense for those three trips?
No, different teams.
Okay, so it's converting. Okay.
Yeah, they're just coming off the baseline. Yeah.
And your team uses zone defense, so.
Not much.
Not much, but not much. That comes to the question of saying, how are we developing zone offense, which is a common question by all coaches, if we don't play zone defense?
I think the more that I have a luxury that we have male scrimmage guys, we got about 10 or 12 of them. And this year was the first year that, again, support from the administration that we traveled our male scrimmage team on the road. So they helped us with practice on the road the night before the game and the day of shoot around. So again, we're going to put when you're preparing for an opponent, you're going to tailor that zone to who you're going to play. Now, again, we got two scrimmages in those 30 practices in 42 days where you got to have some basic zone attacks in already, right? And That's
How common is it to travel with your scout team? I'm curious about that.
this was the first year that the NCAA allowed you to do it, right? We saw it a lot around the country. A lot of people now, not everybody can take advantage of that financially.
Of course. Yeah, very curious about that. Hey, coach, a brief timeout from the podcast to bring you the Analytics Minute, sponsored by Hoopsalytics. If you watch a lot of basketball game video like we do, you always see things you'd like to remember or share. Being able to capture, organize, retrieve, and share plays, sets, and actions with a playbook for your coaching staff and players will make your teams and overall programs that much better. Hoopsalytics now includes an integrated playbook organizer that can do the following for you. Add plays, including text descriptions, diagrams, other images, and videos from just about anywhere. Link to real-life examples of these plays from your game videos. Categorize playbook entries as plays, actions, drills, moves, and other categories. Add attributes for different entries like man, zone, needed to, etc. Star entries to feature for a team like things to learn before a practice. Hoopsalytics brings the most powerful analytics to teams of all levels. It's easy to use and affordable. It's like AI for basketball coaches. Visit hoopsalytics.com/ball today. That's hoopsalytics.com/ball today to learn more and start analyzing your games for free. So you referenced a little bit two different concepts. I want to dive a little deeper and get to your insights in terms of how to teach it and maybe how to help develop it. And that's the baseline cutter. And also we'll start with that one. Baseline cutting versus zone, or hiding behind the zone in the baseline, dunker spot, whatever it is. What are some insights in terms of developing that? Because that type of movement obviously is a big advantage versus a zone potentially.
Yeah. And I think you have a lot of breakdown, right? In your guard post stuff, right? We'll have zone segments, right? Where we won't have a center. We'll have two bottom forwards, two top guys, and the guards will be on one side. And now we move it, we attack gaps, play on a string, right? And then we'll add cuts out of it. And the post guys will be on the other side. And we like to start our post players in the mid-post area, right? So when we go, that ball move past that elbow line, that slot line, now that opposite post player goes behind the center and behind the bottom forward, not across. So we still hold the high post. We got somebody in the short corner. Ball gets reversed. Now you're going just Xing out against a 2-3, right? Now against a 2-3, we like to get it to the elbows, dive from the other elbow and look to skip opposite, follow the ball, and then the other guy flashes. So the more that you can change sides of the floor, either with the dribble or the pass, now you got player movement and you got ball movement.
I love it. The great insight there. And then the other thing you mentioned, and let's maybe focus on off the ball first, screening versus a zone, particularly around slip decisions or different advantages that way.
Yeah. Let's say the ball's on the wing, right? And you have either, most likely it's going to be the off guard guarding the ball. And if you can set a good, screen on the ball, and now you're sliding the point guard to the side and you got the off guard on the other side. Now you can come and attack off the ball screen, but what I like to do, I like to rise when the ball is going this way. I like to rise another guy back to the wing. So we go right back. Now who's got to take that pass? It's got to be the forward. Now we got some quick hitters. We'll have a perimeter guy. Now that bottom forward's got to take that pass. We'll run another guy to the corner and we overload it. Now that bottom forward, okay, now that's the only guy that can go out there is the center to take that corner one. So now we see a lot of just because of when we're screening the side of zones, right? A lot of people will ice us or turn us down, right? And we'll go 20 toes to the sideline. And now it's just, okay, you got to incorporate, right? Slipping short roll, butt screen, attacking the ice, attacking the post player. And now the screener screens away to the top guard. And now you bring somebody back to the wing. So those are all actions depending on what people do that we work on.
Can you take us through the butt screen a little bit more? I know that's always a fascinating question because I know internationally that's a little bit more of a thing than it is domestically.
Yeah, I think the more it's all about footwork. It's footwork and positioning. And you see it so much in the NBA with people flipping screens, and it's all about footwork. And it's about A lot of people like to run pick and roll and slot screens and side pick and roll, but if you don't have good angle, right, and good angles and have an understanding and your players understanding why we're screening, where we want to screen, what's the point of attack and where we're attacking, I think that goes down to a lot of player development and breakdown. All right. The butt screen's all about positioning and sealing and holding your screen, right? And not going too early because then it's a moving screen the other way, right? Because any screen, you can set a screen and roll, but if that defender shies away from contact and releases and you don't make contact, you can move all you want. If the defense doesn't absorb and take contact on a roll or a slip.
Love it. Love talking about the butt screen again. Maybe a little underutilized at time, but also sometimes coaches ask me, what's the point? And I'm like, sometimes it changes the angle, as you said, but it also changes the vision for the receiver in some ways too, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And it's a, you got to work on the pocket pass. You got to work on this, on the slip now, the short roll. You hit the short roll now on that butt screen. Can that guy make that shot? Can he make the, can he catch it on the run? Stop, go either way with either pivot foot, inside pivot, reverse pivot. Can he put it down on the ground? Can he make the next pass after catching it and establishing? So those are all things that, of course, you got to work on. On a regular screen, right? You're either rolling, you're slipping, you're sprinting to space. Those are very important
I love that you're
things.
making those points because again, a coach in Europe, it just helped me remember that he called it basically the stampede version of the ball screen roll, that you're already facing the direction you're going in a way, so it can get them faster into a position in space. It's just a fascinating
Yeah,
thing.
you're already facing the basket.
Exactly, already facing the basket. Anyways, just curious. I haven't had many coaches mention that, so I love going down that rabbit hole. And coach, another thing I want to talk about a little bit is attacking matchups is such a big part of basketball, and you referenced that already with scout and different things relative to that. But I'm curious against a zone. Is that also a part of your zone philosophy to be able to attack with certain matchups or attack certain weaknesses
Yeah,
defensively?
in any zone, when the ball's in the corner, it turns into a 2-3, whatever zone it is. When you're going matchup, you run a cutter through. If they're going to follow them, that means, hey, they're in a matchup or they're in a man, right? I think when there's, when you get stagnant too, you got to be able to adjust and say, hey, you know what? We're stagnant. We're not getting anything out of quick hitters. Let's run our side-to-side man stuff. Let's just run our man stuff against it. Now we get a ball reversal. Now we can come off a screen and guys are in different areas and the zone doesn't see where guys are flashing or coming from. So you got to be able to adjust that too, where, hey, this stuff not, let's just run our man stuff against it.
And will you attack a weak defender or will you attack with one of your better players in certain spots in a zone?
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's, and again, I think there's a lot of in-game stuff that you have to do too, that there's certain guys that you want to attack and certain guys that you might want to get into foul trouble early because they're not going to hurt you from if they're sitting down on the bench. And I think you've seen the growth on our side where we've made the adjustment to going to quarters and the men are still archaic and playing in halves and the men can't advance the ball off of timeouts. At least for us, let's say if we only got two or three team fouls and there's 15 seconds left, hey, we got fouls to give because every quarter and every possession is important. So we're going to foul, make you take it out on the side. We got another foul to give. Hey, we'll take it again. We'll sub and have somebody foul. So I think there's a lot of thing games within the game that if you can steal possessions, you can win analytically those type of battles.
I'm glad you referenced that. I won't say it, but I'll just be nodding my head to the archaic nature of the men's game. It's just for anyone listening, I think the one of the biggest reasons beyond what some of the things you just said is just less free throws because they get wiped out at the quarter. And there's nothing like watching a game where they're already shooting bonus in the first 10 minutes of the second half or something. And
Right.
that's been eliminated with the quarters, right?
It has. And you watch a men game and you know at the seven they're shooting 1-on-1 and then you get to 10 and they're
Yeah.
shooting two free throws and it's just it's wild. I think the game has evolved now that there's been a lot of conversations and being able to recruit internationally and work with USA Basketball and now my position with the WBCA and I don't know how far along is are we ready to go to 24-8? I don't know, but you got middle school kids in Europe playing with a shot clock and an 8 second backcourt count. And we can't do it here.
They get more decisions as the advantage for development. And I
Correct.
don't know why we're resisting that. It's about the kids, it's about the players, and it's about their development. But yeah, I do want to ask you, maybe let's start internationally, coach. Your experience with USA Basketball, I know you have another one coming up. I referenced it in our intro, but maybe what were some things that stood out being involved in that internationally? Maybe some of the coaching lessons that you learned.
Yeah, working with Terry and Neil were great because, and our two court coaches last summer were Charmin Smith and Shea Ralph. So it was almost like every night, right? Or at lunch and at night, it was like a five-person coaching clinic. And one thing that I wish a lot more coaches would do would share, because we all know what everybody's going to do now with technology and the amount of film that we all can watch and what we can prepare for. But that was my biggest take of, hey, these are some of my favorite drills that we do, right? These are my favorite quick hitters to get my wing a shot. There's a lot of stuff that I like to do late in the shot clock. So I think that's what I got most out of it. I've always been a big fan of the international game. I know it's going to be a little bit different going to the World Cup because FIBA Americas was a little different. Canada was very good. The FIBA Americas group is not as competitive as the World Cup is going to be, just with Australia and France and Spain and all the other countries that participate. And everybody's got a different style, and that's just so fun to watch. You see so many things, and you every year, it's almost like in the summer. And a lot of, I think Paul Biancardi said this, or one of, if you want to watch basketball, right, you watch the NBA. If you want to watch what the NBA is going to run, go watch EuroLeague. And that's true. You watch the NBA now, and you see so many different concepts of three guys on the floor, pitch, stagger, curl, right, into zoom action, all the stuff off the horns. Right, horns entry, handoff, or a flare. So you see a lot of actions. It's almost you go to watch European basketball for a summer, and there's three or four actions that everybody's running. And then the next year, it's four or five actions that everybody's running, but it all comes, it's really neat.
Yeah, what a great experience and a lot of fun, as you said. And obviously, sharing is a part of this, and we're grateful you're sharing with this podcast as well. But obviously, congratulations too on the WBCA appointment. That's pretty cool. Can you talk to us a little bit of maybe about that in terms of what some potential visions are yours for the future?
I think a lot of coaches around the country don't know everything that the WBCA board of directors does and everything that the NAEBC does. So we have 31 conference captains, right? One from every league. And the WBCA is the voice of the coaches for Division I, II, III, NAIA, junior college, high school. So I think from our level, it's really taking a look at how can we improve our game? How can we have a voice for our coaches, whether it's the April period, April recruiting period, May recruiting period, the July recruiting calendar? Do we got to make any adjustments? What rules do we want to talk about in regards to male scrimmage players, in regards to managers? How many total games do we think are necessary? How many scrimmages do we need? Is two a good number? Do we need three? There's so many issues that come about that we talk about that are important because, yeah, we have a board, but we have a stewardship group and everything that goes through the WBCA that our conference captains brings and we talk about, then that goes to oversight committee then pushes it along to get a vote and see if it's something that's going to be beneficial for our game or not. But also involving with the rules committee as regards to there's a lot of different rules that I know one of the things that are being talked about is, okay, can you go to instant replay? If you go to instant replay, do you lose a timeout? So those are things that are in the hopper. But again, you got over 360 Division I institutions. Does everybody have the technology at their place to do that? And sometimes if you do any rule changes, it's got to be good for Division I, II, and III, or is this rule just good for Division I and not for II and III?
I'm curious in this landscape, coach, is it more that coaches now are just like, let's get rid of some of these rules, or do they want more rules because of the landscape?
I don't know, half and half.
Yeah. Still no consensus. Because it's obviously uniquely different than when you first started and
Yes, without a
everything.
doubt.
No doubt. But coach, if I or someone shadowed your program for a week, what would you hope that they would take away about how South Florida develops players and people within your program?
I think if you come to a practice, I think you'll be very impressed of the pace and the intensity and how well we communicate and how our kids play with a lot of joy and a lot of energy and how much they care for one another. You're going to see that, right? There's one thing that all coaches talk about that I shouldn't have to coach effort here. We shouldn't. And if you got to coach effort, that's a big problem. And whether you go day one, day 10, day 30, day 60, day 90, that intensity of practices should look the same. The organization, the communication should look the same. And that's what really good teams do. Because guess what? Everybody's really excited for that first practice. If you have a bad, shitty first practice, you're not going to have a very good year. I can guarantee you that. There's not many teams around the country that have a bad day, first day of practice. Now, can you have that same energy, enthusiasm, care for one another, togetherness, competitiveness, communication on day 10, day? It's the same thing that we talk about in games, the importance of every possession. The end of the game is always so magnified, right? Everybody looks at, okay, it's a one possession game, or you know what? They didn't execute down the stretch. They didn't do a good job coming out of a timeout. But how about the other 90 possessions? Because if possession three, possession 15, possession 30 was different, it wouldn't be a one possession game. And that's what we try to instill in our players.
I guess what were some of the biggest challenges you faced, maybe building your program in that initial situation that you got there? And then what is maybe one that still is evident today that's still a big challenge within your program?
Wow, okay. I think when I took over, I knew how to run a practice. I knew how to do a scouting report. I thought I knew how to teach. I really had a tough time managing a staff, right? And managing up and dealing with different areas on campus. And until you get that response, those opportunities and growth and experience, you're not going to be great at it, right? It was more the outside of the basketball stuff. I got a great opportunity here. The program that I took over, I think the school record for wins was 16, and they had never been to a postseason before. Now, in 25 years, we've gone to 20 postseasons. We got, I don't know, 19, 20 banners up there, whether it be NCAA, NIT, now WBIT, whatever the new tournament is. I didn't worry about what I didn't have. I worried about what I did have. And if you just concentrate on making sure you hire a great staff, you schedule the right way, you recruit the right people, you develop those people, and you get connected and have great relationships. It's Gino's a very he's a personal friend of mine. I know you know that. He gave me some great advice. It's easier to turn a program around. You know what the tough part is? It's about sustaining. That's the tough part. Can you continue to sustain excellence? Can you continue to sustain winning? Because yeah, when you win, you want to win more, right? And but you don't want to take chances or gamble on your culture and your decision making and who you're bringing in and who you're hiring to win more.
And you've done that. And I'm just curious, as you mentioned that about staff management, then what are some of the lessons maybe you can share with coaches now with all your experience having done that?
Biggest thing, appreciate that you got an opportunity, that you got a job, because there's a lot of people looking for a job. And I think the when you're an assistant, think about if you were a head coach, how would you like your assistants to work for you? And taking really self-reflection on, all right, do you work good with people? Are you a good communicator? How do you talk to your fellow coworkers? How do you talk to your players? The loyalty and the hard work, that's a given, but it's all the other things that come with that. And I think when you hire people and you bring people into your program, the biggest thing is, okay, does this person really love the game? Or are they just in this, they just want a job because they need a job? Do they have aspirations to be a head coach? How are they? What's their growth level? How much are they going to be receptive to being coached as a staff member? Can you set them up? Can you set them up to move on to that next position? Adobo to be an assistant, a video to be assistant, a player development to be an assistant, a GA to get that next job, an assistant to get, have them set up to be able that they're ready to get a head job. That's my job.
So with that, I assume you want people that want to be at their next level, and that's encouraged on your part. So what is maybe a specific way that you can help them move, as you said, from their, say, Dobo to their next level or assistant to their head coaching level? What are some things that you can do as a head coach?
I try, and there's a lot of coaches and a lot of my former staff members that go to different programs, and they're very thankful that they were involved in every scouting meeting, academic meeting, recruiting meeting. So they're learning everything, because that's the way that I learned. All right. When I was at a junior college assistant, a Division II assistant, I was the only one there. I had to have experience in all areas, in all facets. And I think that's the way that you can prepare young people for their next job.
So you rotate their responsibilities within the year, within their time with you, in terms of they don't just have one scout for one team, or
even though it's not their responsibilities, they're in everybody's on every recruiting meeting. And then when we bring the whole staff together and it's our academic person, hey, everybody's in that room. When we're meeting on every kid and my strength coach is in there, our nutritionist is in there, our athletic trainer's in there, and then we have the other 12, 14 people we have on staff, everybody's in there, even if you're a graduate assistant. So while you're here, you're developing your coaching system and your coaching binder that, hey, you're at every workout. That if you go interview for a job, you can do a point guard workout. You can do a wing workout. You can do a stretch four workout. You can do a post workout. Okay, I've sat in recruiting meetings. I know how to do an unofficial visit. I know how to do an official visit. How we travel, right? This is a way, boom, here are all our travel itineraries. So they're getting everything.
Love it. Sounds like a good place to be a coach. Reflecting then a little bit as we wrap up here, coach, advice to coaches in the profession, especially in your role as a WBCA vice president coming in, what is some advice to coaches about just themselves and the profession?
My biggest advice now, don't get frustrated because you haven't gotten a job or you went on an interview and you didn't get a job. You need to use that as fuel. You either got a choice to get better or you get bitter, right? Because if you didn't get hired, that means that head coach or that senior women's administrator or that basketball administrator thought that they needed something different for the program, right? It doesn't mean that you weren't good enough, right? Be great at where you're planted. Do a great job for your boss. Continue to network. Continue to connect. And be great at the job that you have. Because let me tell you right now, you go to a men's Final Four and a women's Final Four, there's a lot of people looking for jobs. So be thankful that you have one. And try and, if you're not good at certain things, there's a lot of time in the day that you can get better at in regards to going to clinics, going to watch other practices, going to NBA camp, WNBA camp, going to other colleges, to see other colleges. So there are a lot of things that you can do on your own. How many, now the resources in regards to synergy and the amount of coaching libraries and Brendan Sir and coaching you, holy cow, be a sponge. You have so many things at your disposal that you can really get good at, right? And I try and get as much as experience for my young guys too, to get them out and recruit. So they also have a chance to sit in a gym and evaluate and get that experience as well. But the more that you can be involved and learn from different people and be great at the job that you are, I'm a true believer that if you're good, you're going to be very successful. And if you're good and you want to move up, people will find you.
Love that. Great advice and incredible insights throughout, coach. You're true to your word. You were honest and you shared with us. So we can't thank you enough for being able to share the game with us.
Thank you.